what we're about to talk about in the next 49 minutes. And I will promise you, since it's Friday afternoon and it's Austin, we will be out of here on time. But I'm also going to promise you that if any of you have questions, I will stay here as long as it takes to answer your questions, because that's how much I believe in all this. But the reason we're talking about ethics on a Friday afternoon is so that you can learn from my horrific experience, half a decade of aggravation and stress. And I'll tell you one quick funny story. I hate war stories, but this is just too good. When the case was over, one of the jurors got permission from the judge to call me. And she said that the jury had decided very quickly how they were going to resolve the matter during deliberations, but they wanted to ask the judge if they could award me more than what I'd asked for because of the stress and aggravation of having to deal with this man, who, by the way, represented himself pro se in his lawsuit against me. And I felt like taking an exhibit sticker and putting it right in the middle of his forehead, because he was the best exhibit I possibly could have had. But the main reason that we're here is so that you don't have to experience, or you limit the possibility that you'll experience, what I went through over the course of 5 very miserable years. There are 3 important takeaways from this seminar topic. The first one is that it's really, really important that you or your law firm have a comprehensive written representation agreement. I have a brilliant colleague who is one of the best board-certified appellate lawyers around, better than me, I think. And she came to me one day and said, I've got a problem. I said, what's the problem? And she said, and by the way, I cleared with her, as long as I don't use her name discussing this, I've represented a company for decades, and I've never had a problem with them, but now all of a sudden there's a problem. They're you know, claiming I'm overbilling, and I shouldn't be rounding up, and I shouldn't be charging for certain things. And I said, well, that's easy enough. What does your written representation agreement say? And she said, I don't have one. I've never needed one. I've known the president of this corporation for decades, a good family friend, but the company was sold, and the new people who took it over aren't quite as amenable, and they're taking a very rough approach to my bills and really don't want to cooperate the way the former owners did. And so this really, really smart lawyer is out there basically saying, this is my hourly rate, and this is what I'll do for you, nothing in writing. And as long as you have a client that's amenable and cooperative and friendly and works with you, that's great. But just because you have a flesh and blood client who does that, if they're part of an organization, people in organizations change, companies get sold. Things can be different later on than they were at the beginning. And that's why you can't assume that just because there's a good relationship with a client, that necessarily that good relationship will continue on forever. So that's the reason that a handshake or a simple agreement on what the hourly rate and the initial retainer is not sufficient anymore. The other thing is, there's a new breed of client out there, and the gentleman, I'll use that term, that I discussed with you a few minutes ago, was part of this new breed of client. The good news is that they really are a very small percentage of the client pool out there. The bad news is that if you get hooked up with one of them, it will likely create a great cost to you, your family, your firm, your health, your well-being, your practice, and maybe your financial well-being as well, because they insist on winning at all costs, including if you don't get the result that they want, they have no hesitation at all about going after your personal assets, your firm assets, your law license, your livelihood, and your insurance coverage. All whether it's justified that they do that or not. One of the most potentially dangerous allegations that a client can make against a lawyer, whether it's in a grievance or in a lawsuit, is, quote, I would not have gone forward with the representation if the lawyer had disclosed X. Why is that so potentially dangerous? If a client is willing to testify that an attorney failed to inform him or her about something at the beginning of the representation, and there's no documentation that that information was provided to the client at the beginning of the representation, that matter becomes what? a disputed issue of material fact. Why is that an important phrase? Disputed issues of material fact sometimes mean the difference between a take-nothing summary judgment in your favor ending a potentially horrific lawsuit, or a finding of no just cause in a grievance because they say, well, you didn't tell me X, and X is right there in your written representation agreement. That's how you get grievances disposed, with a finding of no just cause, and you don't end up going to district court or a grievance panel. Just as important, legal malpractice carriers and law firm administrators tend to be very, very risk averse. They look to settle sometimes otherwise meritless lawsuits simply because of the issue, the presence of a disputed fact issue, and the cost that it will incur to the firm in its reputation and potentially malpractice coverage if they end up fighting it all the way through.